Welcome to the German Beer Academy. Nice to have you here. Let's have a great time together.
Okay, so alcohol-free beer, huh? Not just for those designated drivers anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
This is like a whole global thing now. It's changing how we think about what's even in our glass.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really fascinating.
We've got a ton of articles here, market reports, even some like deep dives into the history of it all. You ready to figure out why this isn't just some trend?
Yeah, let's do it. I think it's really interesting because it's more than just like, you know, cutting back on alcohol.
Right.
It's about like having options, having quality, and maybe even like a little bit of a cultural shift, you know, especially for younger generations.
Totally. And I was looking at some of these stats earlier and they kind of blew my mind. Like, did you know that 1 in 10 beers sold in Germany is alcohol free?
Wow.
Germany.
That's wild.
And we're talking globally, billions of dollars in this market now. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing that really got me. Brell, which is an alcohol free beer, it's outselling all Coca-Cola in Slovakia. Not Diet Coke, all of it.
That's incredible.
What's happening over there?
I think it speaks to a couple of things. Like, first off, taste is important. And that old, you know, image of alcohol-free beer, like it's this lesser substitute, is fading.
Yeah.
These aren't like, you know, those watery, you know, almost beers from back in the day. Brewers are getting really creative.
Yeah.
But also, it makes you wonder if it's reflecting like a different way people are thinking about drinks.
Right.
Like, if a place known for amazing beer is choosing this, it's more than just a fad.
Yeah, it makes you rethink that whole it's 5 o'clock somewhere thing, you know?
Right.
Like, maybe just hanging out with good company and a good drink, that's enough.
Exactly.
Alcohol or not. But speaking of history, this whole thing goes way back. Like, 1895 in Germany, they were already trying this.
Yeah. They were determined. They called them Malzgold and Reform beer. But those early versions, they... Let's just say they had some room for improvement on the taste and how long they lasted.
Oh, I bet. It makes you appreciate how far it's come.
Right.
But it makes sense, though, right? Big moments in history, they kind of force people to innovate. It's
yeah.
like, hello, prohibition in the U.S.
Right.
Talk about a time when people wanted their beer, but legally couldn't have it.
Yeah. And ironically, once prohibition was over, a lot of those early attempts at alcohol-free beer in America, they just faded away.
Right.
People went back to the hard stuff, but I guess it got the ball rolling, you know. Meanwhile, over in Switzerland, things were getting kind of sneaky, like secret research projects, hidden formulas. It's like a spy movie.
Okay, hold on. You have to tell me more about this. What was with all the secrecy?
Well, in the 1930s, there was this Swiss brewery, Gurtenbier, and they start using this new method called vacuum distillation. Basically, they're taking the alcohol out, but they're not boiling away all the good stuff, the flavor. It was really cutting edge for the time.
So they finally figured out how to make it actually taste good.
Exactly.
That's huge.
Big deal, right? But then World War II comes along, and it's not exactly, you know, time for beer experiments anymore.
Right.
But after the war, another Swiss brewer, Hans Herlemann, he picks up where they left off. But this guy, he was convinced that other brewers, his rivals, were going to steal his ideas.
Oh, no.
He kept all of his research, all of his notes in a bank vault.
That's some serious dedication. So what was his big breakthrough? What did he figure out?
He actually developed this special type of yeast that naturally makes very little alcohol.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No need for all that fancy extraction. And his alcohol-free beer, Barrel, it took off. I mean, it spread through Europe, even made it to the U.S. But keep in mind, all of this is happening while Germany's still divided, right?
Right, right.
And they had very, very different reasons for wanting to make good alcohol-free beer.
Okay, divided by beer, but united by the lack of it.
Exactly.
All right, I got to know more about this.
Yeah, so in East Germany, they had this rule, 0.0% blood alcohol if you were driving.
Wow, strict.
Yeah. And with everyone using the Autobahn, they realized, okay, people still want a beer they can enjoy, even if they're driving.
Makes sense. Practicality over prohibition, right? Yeah. So who was this East German beer hero? Did they have their, like, secret lab and everything?
So his name was Ulrich Wappler. And talk about a challenge,
yeah.
right? He couldn't even, like, call up brewers in the West for advice.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
His own brothers had defected. He had to start totally from scratch.
Wow, that's some serious Cold War brewing rivalry going on. How do you even begin?
He basically, like, locked himself away for, like, 6 months straight. Just dug through every patent brewing journal, anything he could find.
Wow.
He was determined to figure this thing out.
To dedication.
And he did. He came out of it with the first successful East German alcohol-free beer.
They should make a movie about this guy. What they call his creation.
At the start, it was AUBI.
AUBI.
Yeah, it stood for Auto for Beer Driver's Beer.
Catchy.
Yeah, not exactly memorable. They later changed it to Pilot, which was a bit better.
Yeah, slight upgrade there. Yeah. So while the East was all about the driver's beer, what was happening in the West?
It was all over the place. I mean, some breweries just imported Barrel from Switzerland.
Right.
Easier than starting from zero.
Sure. Why reinvent the wheel?
Exactly. But some brewers, they wanted to figure it out themselves. So you had Hummer Brewery. They were first, had their alcohol-free beer in 75.
Okay.
Then Sandwald came out with Pro Beer, and then St. Martin Brewery with St. Martin Fit.
A lot of fit beers, it sounds like.
Right. They were onto something with that whole health angle early on.
Definitely. But those weren't the big names that, like, really took off, were they?
No. The ones that really changed the game were Henninger. They had Gerstel in 77.
Okay.
And then, of course, Klausthaler in 78.
Oh, yeah.
That was the turning point for alcohol-free beer in West Germany.
And Klausthaler's still going strong, which says something. But let's be real. For a while, alcohol-free beer, it had a certain reputation. It wasn't exactly known for being delicious.
Yeah, that's fair.
So how did they bridge that gap? Like, how did we go from bland to all the amazing variety we have now?
Well, that's where the science behind brewing gets really interesting. You know, remember those early attempts? Those taught brewers a lot.
Like, right?
So now you've got, like, five main methods for making alcohol-free beer, each with its own, like, quirks.
Okay, let's break it down. Method number one. Hit me with it.
Halted fermentation. It's like, the most straightforward way to do it, basically, you're controlling the yeast very carefully.
Right, because yeast is doing all the work here, right?
Yeah. Yeast is like the tiny little brewmaster in the beer, you know?
Love it.
So during fermentation, the yeast eats the sugar and makes alcohol. So with halted fermentation, brewers use special yeasts, or they mess with the temperature so they can, like, slow down or even stop the yeast before it makes a ton of alcohol.
So it's like hitting the brakes at just the right time.
Exactly. Too early and the beer's too sweet, too late, and, well, it's not alcohol-free anymore.
High stakes. What are the downsides to doing it that way?
Well, you can end up with more sugar left in the beer, you know, because the yeast hasn't broken down all the sugars in the wort. That's the sugary liquid before it becomes beer, by the way. So that can make it sweeter than some folks like.
Makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Okay, what's method number two? What else have we got in our brewing toolbox here?
Full fermentation and distillation. This one's a little more involved, but it gives the brewer a lot more control.
Interesting. So they're letting the yeast go wild and then dealing with the alcohol afterward.
You got it. Brew it like a regular beer, then use a little science to pull that alcohol out after the fact, like making a cake and then, I don't know, carefully removing the sugar somehow.
That's a magic trick I want to see. But seriously, how do you get rid of the alcohol after the beer's already made?
Distillation. You heat up the beer, and because alcohol has a lower boiling point than water, it evaporates first. What you're left with is basically your alcohol-free beer.
Slick. But doesn't heating up beer mess with the flavor?
That's the thing. Regular distillation, it can make the beer lose some of its, like, subtle flavors and aromas.
Ah, I see. So how do you distill out the alcohol without ruining the beer?
That's where vacuum distillation comes in method number three. It's gentler on the beer because you can use lower temperatures. Think of it like a pressure cooker, but the opposite.
So lower pressure, lower boiling point, less heat, happier flavor.
Exactly. You're basically trying to keep the beer tasting great while still kicking out the alcohol.
Clever. All right, what's next on the list?
Next up is reverse osmosis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Flashback to high school science class. How's that work again?
Basically, imagine this filter, right? But it's so fine, it can separate out alcohol molecules from everything else. Push the beer through this membrane, it traps the big flavor molecules, but lets the tiny alcohol molecules slip through.
So you're, like, filtering out the alcohol at a microscopic level? That's wild. Okay, last one, bring it on.
Last but not least, alternative yeasts. We were talking about how important yeast is, right?
Right, the tiny brewmasters.
So some brewers are now using these special yeasts that just naturally make way less alcohol as they ferment.
So instead of taking the alcohol out afterwards, they're using yeast that just, like, doesn't make that much in the first place.
Exactly. It's more natural. And some brewers swear by it. They say it makes a tastier, more authentic beer.
I like that. Working with nature, not against it. It seems like all these methods, they've got their pros and cons. Do brewers ever combine them?
Oh, absolutely. They might do a halted fermentation and then use a little vacuum distillation at the end to fine-tune it, you know? It's like a chef. They're using all these different techniques to make something really special.
Speaking of special, up next, we're going global. Time to meet some of the rock stars of the alcohol-free world, from small, family-run places to breweries that are, like, pushing the limits of what's even possible with beer. Stick around. All right, so passports ready. We're going around the world to meet some of the coolest people making alcohol-free beer today.
Yeah, and these aren't just, like, your average home brewers. These are some seriously innovative breweries.
Oh, yeah, they're changing the game, showing everyone that alcohol-free can be just as interesting, if not more so, than, you know, regular beer.
Definitely.
Okay, first stop, we're heading to the UK, home of Nirvana Brewery.
Ah, Nirvana.
And no, not the grunge band, though. I bet their beers would go great with some 90s music.
Right.
But the story here is awesome. So Nirvana Brewery, they were founded by these siblings, Becky and Joe Keane, and they did it for their dad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He decided to stop drinking alcohol, but they still wanted him to be able to enjoy a good beer with the family.
Oh, that's so sweet. What kind of beers do they make?
They focus on brewing those, like, lower alcohol beers, yeah. And they use those alternative yeasts we were talking about earlier.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they've got all kinds of styles, IPAs, stouts, saisons, the whole gamut. And they're really passionate about spreading the word that alcohol-free doesn't have to mean, you know, sacrificing flavor.
I love that.
Me too. All right, sticking in the UK for a sec, we've got Big Drop Brewing.
Okay, yeah, they're great.
They're a perfect example of how fast this whole movement's growing.
Absolutely.
So Big Drop was started by a new dad, Rob Fink, and he just wanted better alcohol-free options, you know? He was sure there were other people out there who wanted, like, craft-quality beer without the alcohol.
Right.
And turns out he was totally right. They've been crazy successful, which just goes to show how much demand there is for this.
Totally.
Okay. Next on our world tour, we're still technically in the UK, but this brewery has a definite Aussie vibe. Drop Bear Co. Have you heard of
it? Yeah. Drop Bear, like the mythical Australian creature.
Exactly. Don't worry. No actual drop bears were harmed in the making of these beers.
Okay, good, good.
But it's that same sense of, like, adventure and fun, you know, that they bring to their beers.
I like it. What makes their beers unique?
They're all about unusual flavors, stuff you don't see every day.
Like what?
They have a Yuzu Pale Ale, a tropical IPA. They really push the envelope, which I appreciate.
Yeah, it's like they're bringing a bit of Australia to the rest of the world, but in beer form.
Exactly. Okay, time to hop across the pond to the U.S., where we'll find Well-Being Brewing.
Well-Being.
Yeah, they were actually the very first brewery in the U.S. that was dedicated to alcohol-free beer.
Wow, I didn't realize they were the first.
Yeah, it was this husband and wife team, Jeff and Genevieve, and they really paved the way, you know, showed everyone that Americans wanted high quality, tasty, alcohol-free options, even in a market that was still so focused on, you know, traditional beer.
That's awesome. It's amazing to see how much has changed in just a few years.
It really is. And speaking of changing the game, our next U.S. stop is Athletic Brewing.
Yeah, I love that.
They are on a mission. It was started by this guy, Bill Schufelt, used to be a Wall Street banker.
No way.
Yeah. He saw this gap in the market for what he called lifestyle-driven, alcohol-free beer. And they're not just making beer. They're building a whole community around, like, mindful drinking, you know?
I love that.
And they're putting their money where their mouth is, too. They've just gotten so big, they've got 3 breweries across the U.S. now, making all kinds of stuff.
That's so cool.
Okay, last but not least, we find ourselves in Italy, which, okay, I know what you're thinking.
Land of wine.
Exactly. But trust me on this, they're doing amazing things with alcohol-free beer, too.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
Take, for example, Birra Balladin.
Birra Balladin.
There's this craft brewery, and they have fully embraced alcohol-free brewing. They even have this beer called Botanic.
Botanic. Okay, what's so special about it?
It's made entirely with Italian ingredients, and we're not just talking about the usual malts and hops.
Oh, wow. What else is in there?
Coriander, gentian, passion flower, even hemp oil.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like a celebration of Italian flavors, but in this totally new way.
I love that. I really love how these breweries are thinking outside the box, you know? It's not just about making a copycat version of regular beer. It's about trying something different, expanding people's palates, making them rethink what beer can even be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It really hits home that choosing an alcohol-free beer isn't about, like, missing out or depriving yourself. It's about opening yourself up to a whole world of different flavors and, honestly, a more mindful way of enjoying yourself.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
So there you have it. From its humble beginnings, you know, to global phenomenon, alcohol-free beer has come a long way.
It really has.
And it seems like we're just at the beginning of something really special here.
Cheers to this.
That's it for now. Thanks for listening and see you soon in the Academy.